Hello guys, and welcome back to Tales from Wisteria Lane, the podcast where we give you a fair view of all things Desperate Housewives. I'm Joel.
I'm Billy Ray.
And today we will be discussing Season 7, Episode 10, Down the Block, There's a Riot.
Yes, the disaster episode.
It is, yes. I also think it's possibly the last disaster episode of the show.
Possibly.
So I will be doing the overview of the episode and B will be giving us his trivia. So what have you got to start us off?
So this episode was written by Bob Daly and directed by Larry Shaw, and it first aired on the 12th of December 2010. There's a few different things that happened on this week in 2010. So on Monday the 6th of December, there was a new record price for a printed book, which was set when a first edition of The Birds of America by John James Audubon was auctioned at Sotheby's, London, England for £6.5 million.
I've never even heard of that book or that author.
Nor have I, but it's now worth £6.5 million apparently.
Okay.
On Tuesday the 8th of December, Ireland officially left the recession with growth of 1.2% in the third quarter. Good for you, Ireland.
Woo, well done, Ireland.
On Wednesday, the 9th of December, with the second launch of the SpaceX Dragon, SpaceX became the first privately held company to successfully launch, orbit, and recover a spacecraft. This company was founded in 2002, by the way,
yep,
by Elon Musk,
mm-hmm,
who I cannot stand, but all of my praise goes to the efforts of all the workers who did achieve this.
Yeah.
Because that's quite a feat. On Friday the 10th of December, Chinese human rights activist Liu Xiaobo, I'm really sorry if I mispronounced that, was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize at a ceremony in Stockholm while he was imprisoned in China. This was awarded by the Nobel Committee to Liu for his long and non-violent struggle for fundamental human rights in China, saying that he had long been a frontrunner as the recipient of the prize. His wife, Liu Xiaobo, expressed gratitude on behalf of her husband to the Nobel Committee. She said the prize should belong to all those who signed Charter 8 and were jailed due to their support.
Oh, lovely.
So, well earned.
Mm.
On Saturday the 11th of December, two explosions occurred in a busy shopping district in Stockholm, Sweden, killing one and injuring two others. Officials say that they were treating the incident as a terrorist attack.
Okay.
Also, on this day, Good Charlotte, the lead vocalist Joel Madden, married fashion designer and actress Nicole Richie at the age of 30 at Beverly Hills, California, for those who care.
Oh, okay.
The number one song in the US was Raise Your Glass by Pink, and the number one song in the UK was Heroes by the X Factor finalists.
So the same as last week?
Yep.
Yeah.
The title of this episode comes from a lyric in the song What More Do I Need, taken from the Stephen Sondheim musical Saturday Night. The episode was watched by 11.45 million viewers with a 3.5 rating in the key demographic, almost identical ratings to the previous episode. Down the Block, There's a Riot received overwhelmingly positive reviews from fans and critics.
Mm.
This is not the first episode where a protest takes place in front of Paul Young's house.
No.
In The Miracle Song, many people protested that Art Shepherd was a paedophile.
Yeah, yeah.
This episode featured nearly 400 extras during the riot scene.
Yeah, and I really tried to keep a lookout for the extras in the background just to sort of see if any of them were doing really badly or deliberately hamming it up, but I couldn't really see anything.
Oh, okay.
Which is a real shame.
This is the fifth and the last episode to be a disaster episode in the show's history.
Yeah.
Because season 8 in itself is a disaster episode, as in, like, every event is so, like, catastrophically what the hell's happening.
Yeah.
This is the first disaster episode of the series in which no characters die.
Yes.
However, Paul Young is shot and left for dead in the closing moments, and we do have a cliffhanger that implies that maybe Susan is dead, but obviously they weren't going to kill Terry Hatcher.
No.
And that's all I have.
Okay. So previously on Desperate Housewives, Renee confessed her feelings for Tom to Susan. Mm. Keith's proposal was ruined by Bree and his father. Gabby said goodbye to Grace, and Paul caused division between the residents of Wisteria Lane, needing only one more house before he can proceed with his plan.
Mm, and Paul is very clever in this episode.
He is incredibly clever in this episode. So we're going to start with Gabby. So Gabby is looking at a picture of Grace on her phone and crying, which is noticed by Juanita, who asks why Gabby is so sad and if it's because Grace left, which, very perceptive child Gabby has.
Yeah, I wrote a note here. It's quite funny because I wrote a question which was answered almost immediately. And it says, not to sound mean, but why does Juanita look like this when she comes in? She's wearing a middle-aged woman's shirt. And then I've written, oh, it is revealed in that scene that she's playing dress-up, which is why she looks like a middle-aged woman.
That's so rude. Gabby does not dress like a middle-aged woman.
Well, that's probably because we've never seen her wear this shirt.
That's true, yeah. So Gabby passes it off as she's just missing the whole family. It's not just a Grace thing, but it's a Sanchez thing. And then she notices that Juanita is wearing her jewelry and a middle-aged shirt and berates her for it and tells her not to play in her room before Juanita leaves, telling her mum that she preferred her when she was sad.
That's funny.
Which was sass. That was sassy.
Yeah, she is a smart girl, but in all fairness, it's not really a very good lie because Juanita has grown up. She knows her mum, and I think she's very aware that her mum's not going to cry because she misses her family.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Juanita's very self-aware of who her family is. Yeah. Okay, she's got good self-awareness.
Although, well, self-aware to a degree.
I'm Mexican.
We're like those people that sell oranges on the side of the road. So she's self-aware to a point.
Well, yeah, true. So Gabby tells her off for playing with real diamonds and tells her not to come back into her room again and play. And that is just a key little thing. So just keep that in mind.
Yeah.
Next scene, Gabby goes over to Lynette's, who's on the phone trying to get hold of Kinski, when Gabby comes around to ask her for some advice. And she's the only woman that she knows that has lost a child, which is why Gabby specifically comes to Lynette.
But Gabby's so vulnerable and sad here.
She is. Like, once she finds out why it has to be her, Lynette's all ears. So Gabby opens up to her, telling her that she can't stop crying, which Lynette said that she was the same, and she finally went to a therapist, which I actually think is quite interesting that we get told that Lynette goes to a therapist, but we never see her go to one. And it could have been a really interesting character development opportunity with Lynette, considering her historic attitude towards therapy.
I'm glad you said that, because when she said it, I was like, I don't remember that, but I'm sure it happened.
No, she didn't go to therapy for losing the child. When she went to marriage counselling with Tom, that was shortly after Lynette had lost the baby. So I guess in theory, yes, she did see a therapist about losing her child. We just didn't really see it. And any scene we did have with Lynette and the therapist was about her marriage to Tom and not about Lynette's feelings about losing the child.
Well, then I think it's fair that we forgot about it.
Yeah. So there we go. Oh, well. Lynette tells Gabby that it might be a good idea to write Grace a letter, not to be sent, but just to help get out what she needs to say, which Gabby does, but halfway through, Carlos calls for her, so Gabby goes running to him, and then Juanita comes crawling out from under Gabby's bed, quietly puts away the jewellery, and notices the letter.
Yeah, so a couple things about this. The advice to write a letter is a great idea, and it actually works for so many situations.
Yes.
People at my workplace, I work in an office, often write angry emails, like drafts, and they don't send them, just to get it out.
Yes, yeah, I do that too.
But also, why does this big dummy leave the letter on the table exposed like that?
Probably because she was distracted by Carlos, who clearly can't do anything without Gabby.
But she's aware that her daughter plays in this room when she's not supposed to be.
Yeah, it's
I can't believe she didn't just fold it and, like, put it in her pocket or anything else.
It's just, it's plot progression, isn't it? It's a stupid thing that no normal person would probably consider doing, but for plot progression,
oh yeah,
here we are. So later on, Gabby tells Juanita that she's going outside to join the protest and she needs to stay indoors to watch her sister. But Juanita has Gabby's half-written letter. And so Gabby has a little bit of a freak out moment, which you can see, we've all been there, right? Like, that was, I want to say that was such a good acting moment for Gabby because I could see her go cold.
You see her body tense up.
Yeah, like, well done to Gabby for that. Well done to Eva for that. So she's figuring out what to do next, but she goes over to Juanita, who now knows that Grace is Gabby's daughter and believes that Gabby loves Grace more than her. Gabby denies this completely and tells Juanita that she is the most important thing in the world to her, but Juanita doesn't really believe her. She pushes her down, telling her that she isn't her mum, and then runs outside into the protest.
As Amy Lee once said in Evanescence, my heart is broken. That was really upsetting.
It was really sad.
But Gabby, you don't leave your kids alone in the house during a protest. What are you doing?
She was leaving her child alone with her other child.
Yeah, during a protest on your street. What, you're crazy?
Yeah. So Gabby runs out to find Juanita, and then the rest of Gabby's scene will be played out a little bit later.
Yeah.
So moving on to Bree. In the middle of the night, Keith drives over to Bree's and gets out of his truck. And in the morning, Bree grabs her paper and sees Keith down on one knee, as he has been all night, and proposes to her. Sort of. He tries to propose to her, but she stops him midway through and tells him that she isn't saying no, just not yet, as she feels it's too soon, and instead she asks him to move in with her.
I love that scene.
It was such a cute little scene.
I love a reverse proposal, but Can I just say how unfair it is that Brie looks this good in the morning? She's just woke up, she's yawning, collecting her paper, and she looks great.
She looks fantastic.
Like, obviously, Marsha is probably wearing some makeup and stuff because she's a character on set, but the character is supposed to be not wearing makeup, I imagine.
Yeah.
How unfair.
And to be fair, there's only one person in this entire show that looks bad when they wake up in the morning, and that was early seasons Lynette. She was the only one that genuinely looked like an absolute mess when she woke up in the morning. Everyone else looked beautiful and amazing. Now, Lynette doesn't even look bad when she wakes up in the morning.
Yeah, and I guarantee that Felicity Huffman had to wear makeup to make herself look like she was rough without makeup.
Oh god, yeah, of course. So later on, Keep is at home packing and talking to his dad, who is completely stirring the pot. Richard's like getting messy here. And he tries to convince Keith that Brie doesn't seem to be that interested in him, and she likely doesn't love him, otherwise she would have just said yes. And so he's kind of trying to convince Keith that he's possibly a rebound for Brie, because, you know, she's just gone through her divorce, so, you know, she's probably not looking for anything serious and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, he's being such a sleaze.
Yeah, and Keith is kind of falling for it.
Well, he doesn't know about his dad's nefarious intentions.
No, to a certain extent,
He probably just thinks his dad's looking out for him, and because of the age gap, that's probably getting in his head even easier.
Yeah. So Brie is rearranging so that Keith can move in, and he's sitting silently on the bed, and he pulls her in and asks her to wear the ring, if that is where they're sort of heading anyway, but Brie believes that they aren't there yet. So Keith wants a bigger commitment than just moving in, essentially, and doesn't want to wake up one day and find out that he was just a diversion for Brie. And Brie doesn't understand why he's here if he genuinely feels like that. So he tells Brie that he believes that this is a mistake, and he leaves.
Yeah, this is really horrible for Brie. But I mean, it hasn't been that long. Why do you need a bigger commitment right now?
Right? I think Keith is so unreasonable.
It's because his dad's in his head. But seriously, calm down. It hasn't even been that long.
No, I think she's asked you to move in with her.
Yeah.
But that is a commitment. That's a big step. Yeah.
Which really you'd think would come before the marriage proposal.
You would, yeah.
Come on, Keith.
But even in this scene, Brie's like, oh, we need to tell the girls, like, they're gonna be so shocked, Brie living in sin. So like, really, to be fair, for the type of person that Brie is, asking someone to move in with you prior to marriage is quite a big thing. It's not really something that she would normally do. So, you know, Keith really, as the person that is with his girlfriend, should understand that actually that's quite a big commitment for Brie.
Yeah, check out Brie slowly changing with the times.
Yes. So Brie is upset at Keith leaving, and Richard then turns up to give his apologies and then goes to get some work done in her backyard. And she tells him that he doesn't really need to, but he goes anyway, and he like lets himself into her house.
And he asks for a drink.
Yeah, I know.
Just leave.
And Richard's like, oh, well, Keith learned everything he knew from me, so I can do this, blah, blah, blah. And even though he's creepy and he kind of let himself in, and Brie clearly said, no, it doesn't matter, it can wait, like, leave it, he still kind of forced himself in despite Brie's protests. But she'll be glad he's there in a minute.
Yeah.
So Brie is making Richard some lemonade when he hears someone in the house. Assuming it's Richard, she goes over to speak to him, but it's some rando ex-con looking for the halfway house. Brie tells him it's next door and asks him to leave, but he says he isn't going anywhere, and that's when Richard walks in, and Brie tells him that this man just let himself into her home. Brie's very good at that. She's very good at just calling a man over when she needs. She did that in the Halloween episode as well, but obviously she called Keith over in the Halloween episode. Richard faces off with the man, who folds instantly.
I don't appreciate this scene. I don't like the show playing the scary music and making out like this guy's a villainous predator type. Well, he is a villainous predator type, actually, isn't he?
He is.
Which is not cool, and I do not appreciate it, because we don't really talk to any of the ex-cons apart from, I mean, we've seen this guy, a villainous predator, and we've seen another guy who was admitted to murdering someone but telling Beth, but don't tell anyone.
That's true. Yeah, we saw him as well.
So that's not great.
No, it's not great. So Brie has a little freak out moment, and then Richard grabs her and wraps his arms around her because she's shaking, apparently, and he then goes to kiss her, and she pushes him off and asks him to leave, and he tells Brie that he misread signals, which she states clearly that there have been none.
I liked that. There have been no signals?
I was dating your son.
Like, I can tell him, Brie.
Literally no signals. Like, you absolutely stand your ground here, girl.
What the fuck, Richard?
He tells her that he will finish the work and go, but she says that she wants him gone now, and then he gets all up in her face too and refuses to go. Like, Brie literally goes from one creep to another.
I feel awful for Brie, because the show keeps doing this to her. She's got the worst luck with men. She just attracts horrible, scary men. At least with Rex, they could work through it, but then after Rex died, she just keeps being surrounded by abusers and psychos and intimidating men.
There was
and...
that dude that slept with her underage son because he was a sex addict.
But the thing about Bree is that she is such a caring, motherly person. She's the conservative homemaker that she's going to attract these types of men very easily.
Oh yeah, absolutely, because she wants to help. So she will naturally attract those that need the help, or those that she feels needs the help.
And that's going to attract men who think that every woman is supposed to be like Bree. You know the type.
Yes.
So yeah. Naturally, she keeps attracting the abusers, the psychos, and the men that are willing to get up in her face and tell her, I'm not leaving, even though it's her house.
Yeah. So anyway, that's Bree's story, and the rest will be in the riot scene.
Yeah.
So we'll move on to Susan, who weirdly doesn't really have much in her story that relates to her. So Susan is gossiping to Mike over video chat about what Renee said in the previous episode, because she can't really do it with anyone else.
But he's just so preoccupied by his horniness.
Mike's too distracted by how hot she is and how long it's been since he's seen her, telling her that he needs to come home because basically he's incredibly horny. But he does tell Susan to essentially stay out of it, as it was likely a huge mistake on Tom's part so many years ago, but she should just keep an eye on the situation.
They don't really have much for Mike to do this season, and what was that about? Was Mr. Denton busy?
I don't know.
Did he have other commitments? Was he seeking out other work?
You say there wasn't much for him to do, but really, he's only out of the show for a few episodes.
Yeah, but when he was in the show, he wasn't there that much.
No, but the husbands rarely are.
I don't know. Tom's had a lot to do.
Tom's had a lot to do this episode. They're giving Tom a storyline this episode. But even then, Carlos hasn't been in it much.
Maybe it
was. Mike's not really been
in
it.
Yeah, you're right. It could just be there wasn't much for Mike this season. Let's focus a bit more on Tom this season.
Historically, with Desperate Housewives, the husbands dip in and out. But anyway, so Susan leaves that conversation with Mike, just going to keep an eye on it. Later on, Susan is at the Scarvos taking care of Paige when Renee turns up to ask Tom to come over and install something at her place, which Susan notices. And Renee's like, I'll leave the key under the mat. I'm jumping in the shower. And that is such a cliche move.
Yeah, Renee's everything in this scene.
It's such a cliche move. So Tom agrees.
She's like, there's just this random bus that appeared and all these creepy characters are getting off. He's like, that's a school bus. Those are children.
Anyway. So Tom agrees, and then Susan tells Tom, after Renee leaves, Susan tells Tom about her night out with Renee and how she mentioned a fling with a guy who she now can't stop thinking about. Tom gets awkward and nervous at the conversation, and then he tells Susan that it happened before him and Lynette were married, and it meant nothing. But Susan tells Tom that Renee is clearly still in love with him, but you know he apparently doesn't feel the same, and so then Susan wants to tell Lynette, but Tom begs her not to, so Susan essentially tells Tom that she won't tell Lynette if Tom tells Renee to go.
Yeah, but Vanessa Williams leaving the show would be a big mistake.
It would be a big mistake.
Big mistake.
Yes.
Huge.
Huge.
So maybe not. But Tom, you're lucky that it's Susan that found out about this Renee situation, because if it was Gabby...
They don't call her Gabby for nothing.
Like, at least you have Susan saying, you do the right thing, I'm giving you... You have time.
Yeah.
Gabby would not.
Oh, absolutely not, no. So Tom goes marching to Renee's with purpose, I would like to point out. He really storms over there and he goes inside telling her that they need to talk. And then Renee freaks out, confused about how Susan found out, but Tom wastes no time in telling Renee that it was all her flapping her gums. And then he tells Renee that she doesn't want to tell Lynette, but instead she wants Renee to leave, which he also agrees with. Which doesn't leave Renee very pleased.
No.
And then the rest of it is going to be in the riot scenes.
Maybe one of you could say you have that sex sleeping disorder that Gabby had.
Sexomnia.
Yeah.
It's real, look it up. So finally, we get to Lynette's story, which includes all of the protest and everything as well. So Lynette's story is quite long. Mary Alice opens the entire episode by assuming we're all prejudiced to ex-convicts and believe that they all look and act exactly the same and we turn our noses up at them.
Stereotyping with, we all know the wrong kind of people.
Yeah, they smell gross and they look gross and they act gross.
Mary Alice, this is disgusting behaviour.
Check yourself. It's ugly and you should work on that.
Especially in a time when we've gotten to the point where we're so aware of how the prison system works. People are wrongly incarcerated on a massive level. Calm your fucking boots, Mary Alice. You're dead anyway.
Yeah, right? What's it to you? So they all head over to Paul's correctional centre, helping to get it ready, and it doesn't take long for Lynette to come marching over as well, telling Paul he's acting very fast when he hasn't even had approval yet. So back at Lynette's house, the ladies are discussing how confident Paul seems to be, and they all decide to start going door to door to remind everyone of just how serious this is, because none of them want the neighbourhood to change. And by change, I mean they don't want the house prices to drop.
Yeah, it's... We've already discussed this, actually. Let's move on.
Paul is watching from a distance, knowing what they're planning to do, but doesn't care, and we cut to someone grabbing a gun.
Foreshadowing?
Yeah, from, like, inside a box, bureau, chest thing.
Why do they keep it there?
It wasn't even buried inside the chest either. They just opened the chest and it's there on top of, like, a load of blankets and stuff. Just very much right there in the centre when you open it. In the middle of the night...
Imagine dreams.
Mrs. Kinski jumps into a cab with some suitcases and leaves, and that's all we see of that scene.
Yeah, so naturally we're all thinking, like,
oh my god, Kinski's sold. Like, she's... Paul Young only needed one more person and he's convinced Kinski. And it's not too far off the realm of believability.
Oh no, from what we've seen from her in the past, it's like, well, of course she would.
Exactly, like, Kinski's an awful person. We've seen her be awful when she tried to screw Susan out of, like, that dining table set.
Yeah, I mean, most people who struggle with money in a working class environment would... be on a 50-50 about this, like, do I I'd screw over the neighbors, but can I afford not to do this?
Yeah.
But with Kinski, you're like, well, of course she's gonna do it.
So Lynette is talking to the residents and she stops at Andrews, who confirms that he will not cave, refusing to let dangerous ex-cons move in next to his mother.
But, great, so Andrew's xenophobic as well.
Well, yeah, of course he is.
Andrew is a stereotyper.
But based on Andrew's nasty history, Lynette couldn't be sure.
Yeah, I did like that scene.
It was so good. She's like, I don't know. When you were younger, you were pretty nasty. But anyway, as Lynette moves on to the next neighbour, she's stopped by Brent Ferguson, who's president of the Homeowners Association over on Hydrangea Circle, which I believe is just a nearby neighbourhood.
Horrible name.
Yeah. He offers his help to Lynette. Apparently they had a similar situation the previous year, but his situation turned violent, apparently. So Lynette politely walks away, but he stops her, telling her that he will have the homeowner associations of 10 different streets here to scare Paul, but Lynette essentially tells him that she wants to handle this in a more civilized manner.
Mm.
But he does hand over his number just in case she changes her mind.
Yeah, he tries to pass off that violence inflicted by one of his members and, like, explain it away, but it's just foreshadowing.
So Lynette is still trying to get Mrs. Kinski, but she isn't answering her door. So she goes to Lee to question him, assuming that if she has already sold, he would know. And then this is when Lee snaps and tells Lynette that he had nothing to do with what happened and no idea that of Paul's plan. But Lynette doesn't really believe him, telling him that if Paul fails, people will likely eventually forget. But if Paul wins, nobody will ever forgive him.
She's got a point, but it's very unfair.
It is very unfair.
Can we leave the guy alone? He was just doing his job.
Right? Like, and you know that things are serious when we're defending Lee.
I know. I hate myself for doing it, but it's not fair that Lynette's being this way.
No. But Paul sees this altercation between Lynette and Lee from his window, and we always kind of assumed that it was Susan that was weird for always looking out of that window, but here's Paul doing it. So actually, maybe it's the window.
Maybe it has the best view of the street.
I think it does, to be fair. You can see... didn't Mary Alice say that in one episode? You can see all the way from the Britt house at one end down to the Solis house at the other or something.
So it's the window.
It's the window. It's not Susan.
Yeah.
So inside... Paul calls Lee and offers him an opportunity to help him out of the position he's in. And he tells Lee that Kinski has agreed to sell her house. And so she's swanned off for a bit to, you know, get away from everything while the heat dies down. And so he may want to consider the same, seeing as everyone around here hates him already.
Oh, you clever bitch.
Yeah. At the neighbourhood watch meeting, everyone is gathered around waiting for the vote to start. And Kinski still hasn't arrived. And so they're kind of delaying in the hope that she turns up. In the meantime, Paul makes an announcement and he tells everyone that the mayor of Fairview will be here on Friday to present him with an award for outstanding public service, and he wants everyone to be there. So Paul tells everyone that he has another house, and then we cut to Bob and Lee, with Lee regretting the decision and thinking they should have stuck with the neighbourhood, and Bob believing that to be noble but stupid, as Kinski's already sold, so they would have blamed him regardless. This is when Lee sees Mrs. Kinski pulling back up in a taxi, and she tells him that essentially she was duped with a fake job offer, and so she was promised a, you know, an interview, and so she went into the hotel that she was supposed to meet the person at, and they never turned up.
That was obviously Paul.
It was, of course it was obviously Paul.
And
And so
that was such a good play.
Oh, absolutely. And so then Lee says, so you didn't sell your house, and then you know you're an awful person when even Kinski judges you for it. She was like, no, absolutely not. I would never sell my neighbors down the river. Like, what the hell?
Yeah, and I was like, what the hell, Kinski?
So Lynette's now meeting with the dude from Hydrangea Circle, Brett or something, telling him that she gets Paul's rage and she wishes that she had stuck by him at the trial, but what he is doing now isn't right and she won't let him get away with this. So he promises to help Lynette. And then we cut to the lane preparing signs, ready for the protest they're planning, when the mayor gets here.
And you have to say, this is another moment where someone has ticked off Lynette, and so she's doing something to just destroy everything, because Lynette is a dangerous girl.
I'm a dangerous girl.
Because Lynette, there's just no stopping the woman.
Oh no, she's like a dog with a bone.
She's a force of nature.
Yeah.
The amount of destruction this woman can cause.
So the reason that they're doing this while the mayor is coming is because he is in a close race for election right now, and they're hoping that if they put up a big enough stink about it, then he won't let Paul proceed, because he'll realise that if he lets him proceed, he'll have lost the key voters and what have you. So Parker then sort of steps in with some youthful intelligence, and we have a clip.
So, if this protest works and the place doesn't open, what happens to all those ex-cons? I mean, if they don't get to stay here, where will they go?
They'll just go back to where they came from, or some house in another neighborhood.
But what if that neighborhood doesn't want them either? I mean, if they've done their time and they need a second chance, wouldn't it be better for them to be in a nice neighborhood?
In theory, yes, but that's not the way the world works. We have to think about our neighborhood, our children.
Ourselves?
Don't be cute. Some of these men may have good intentions, but some of them could still be really bad guys.
But if we don't even try to help them, are we so sure we're the good guys?
The message that this episode gives is really mixed.
Yes, because these men who could have good intentions, we haven't seen any.
No.
They don't exist.
Every single ex-con that this show has tried to show us, in relation to this whole storyline anyway, has been a really bad guy.
Yeah, they've only shown us scary people. They've shown us a murderer, and they've shown us someone who was predatory towards Bree.
Yeah.
And now we have the youthful Parker, who's just so wonderful.
He really is. Don't get me wrong, I'm really glad that they included this little moment of clarity.
It's a shame it doesn't undo what they're doing, though. They're using the ex-cons as harmful stereotypes. I'm assuming so that we're more on the women's sides when they're doing this protest, so that we don't turn against the women and go on Paul's side.
Yeah.
But let's just say, it's very fucking messy.
Oh, absolutely.
But Lynette is so stunned and so given pause, because she's being so conservative, and she doesn't really have an answer.
No, she doesn't. All she can say to the child is, don't be cute, which is parent way of saying, I don't have an argument, so stop it.
Yeah, he's literally like, well, why do you think this is a good idea if they have nowhere else to go?
Yeah.
And she's like, well, we have to look out for ourselves, so who can say?
And don't get me wrong, okay, not every single person that is released from prison is an exemplary person and will want to come out of the prison system and try to make a life out of themselves, try to rehabilitate and get back on track. Not everybody is like that. So, you know, when Lynette says some of them could be really bad guys, and some of these might be nice, but she's not wrong. But the way that they've gone about this whole thing is just so almost elitist.
Mm-hmm.
It's very like, oh, well, we're the rich people. This is our lane. This is our side of the tracks, and you need to get onto your side of the tracks. We don't appreciate you coming over and blurring the lines.
Yeah. She probably wouldn't admit to being a big fan of people having to be reinstitutionalized, but that is pretty much what you're fighting for.
Yeah.
Well, you're not giving them any chance to rehabilitate themselves.
That's essentially what she said when Parker was like, well, where were they going? She was like, well, they'll go back where they came from.
What the hell does that even mean?
What does that mean? Prison?
That's such a... And that is actually Tory language. Whole, you know, go back to where you came from.
Go back to where you came from. That is conservative language right there that she's using. And even then, we even saw in this scene when Susan comes over, and because Susan does come over at the beginning of the scene, tells everyone that MJ's at his friend's house, Gabby, take a note. and so she's ready to protest, and they're making all of the like placards or whatever. And Roy even says, just so you're aware, we've got plenty of think of the children.
Yeah, I have to give a very minute bit of credit, though. Because the fact that Parker can think this way, and he does give Lynette pause, and I think that what he says here has an effect on Lynette for the rest of the episode.
I think it does. I even wrote, that, you know, he calls his mother out, which we love to see, and it does seem that maybe he starts to get through to her.
He's given her pause, and I think that her actions for the rest of the episode reflect that maybe this has gone through to her a bit, and maybe she is thinking, am I letting my grudge against Paul actually kind of outweigh every good decision that I should be making?
Yeah.
But I think that Lynette and Tom have done well with Parker here.
Absolutely. Anyway, the mayor arrives to greet Paul and Beth at his place, and they prepare for a photo op as he's up for re-election in a few days, and they head inside with the mayor, believing the neighbours must really like Paul to have agreed this. All of Mayor Franklin's followers then arrive with their signs, but Lynette isn't worried as her cavalry have just arrived as well, and hers is much bigger than Mayor Franklin's, and also has much bigger anger issues.
I mean, they just storm onto the lane, and they look so grouchy.
They look miserable, and then a couple of guys come over to Brett, and they're like, oh, we're too late, and he's like, no, you're just in time, and then he opens his boot, and he's got weapons.
Yeah, they start putting out these steel pipes and stuff, and it's like, what do you plan to do with those? This is meant to be a peaceful protest.
Yeah, like, and this is literally what it is. We literally had this a couple of weeks ago at the pro-Palestinian protest in London, where Sarita Braverman stoked the far right, and then we have the English Defence League storming a peaceful protest for no reason.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, we're getting too political, I think.
So, I'm sorry, but there's just... it's a riot episode, and with the current climate...
Yeah.
If we had recorded this, I don't know...
a year ago.
Before the Black Lives Matter protests, this would probably be a very different episode.
Yeah. So Lynette then reminds everyone of the plan, and they go to join the crowd. And the mayor gets up to give his speech, and the residents all start chanting and holding their signs up, much to the shock of the mayor and his assistant or PR man or whoever.
Needless to say that Paul has maybe left out some details with a lot of people.
Lied. Liza Minnelli lies. So meanwhile, Bob and Lee are finishing up their packing and angrily cursing Paul Young, with Lee threatening to kill him if he ever gets his hands on him. But
oh, Lee...
we then see that Lee has included a gun in his bag of clothes, which is very gay.
Yeah, so was that the gun from earlier?
Who knows? Back outside, Susan is chanting, and Renee storms up to her to tell her to keep her big nose out of their business, but Susan is Lynette's friend and won't let Renee ruin her marriage, and she goes deeper into the crowd, but Renee can't be defeated that easily and follows her.
You know, Susan, that's a good friend.
Yeah.
She's really doing sticking her best up. To look out for Lynette here.
Yeah, sticking up for Lynette.
I appreciate that.
So Keith then arrives at Bree's because she messaged him, and his dad is packing up his car and leaving, and he goes inside, and Bree tells Keith what happened with his dad, which is quite honourable, also a little bit messy.
But I do like that she just straight up tells him right away. She's like, I'm not going to let this stick around.
No. Back in the crowd, the mayor mentions Paul, and everyone then boos, and Gabby then runs to Carlos telling him that Juanita has found out about Grace and ran away, and now she can't find her.
Mm-hmm.
Bob and Lee then get their stuff to the car and get inside, and Juanita has decided that the backseat is where she wants to hide.
Yeah.
But they just don't know that yet. She's just hidden there. We just see that. Back at Bree's, Richard is trying to leave, but there are too many people, and this is when Keith runs out, drags him from the car, and starts beating him up. Everyone sees this and believes that Keith is a con.
An ex-con.
Or an ex-con, yeah.
That's one of those ex-cons being on that man.
Yeah, it's one of those ex-cons.
In all fairness, he is wearing a wife beater.
Yeah, and he's got a lot of tattoos. But, you know.
So they're stereotyping.
Of course they're stereotyping. But, you know, what do you expect from these people? So, yeah, they believe Keith is an ex-con and he's beating up a random innocent man. So then they start to run at Keith and start beating him up, to which Bree then runs over and tries to pull them off. And then one man then grabs Bree and shoves her to the floor. So who's really the ex-con here?
Oh, we don't mess with Queen Bree.
No, we don't. Like, these guys are getting physical. So things are now starting to get quite aggressive and tempers are running high. And so then the mayor is pelted with tomatoes, much to Lynette's shock. And then the mayor decides to get the hell out of there.
Well, this is not what Lynette wanted from this protest.
No, but what did you expect when she goes to the people that she went to?
Exactly. Oh no, it's the ramifications of my actions catching up with me.
I really didn't anticipate them catching up to me so quickly.
Right?
I really thought I had a good couple of years before they came back. So Bree then runs back outside with a gun and fires it in the air to stop everyone beating up Keith. But in actual fact, it kind of just silences everyone, who then sees a gun and freaks out, turning the protest into a panicked riot.
This was the moment, and we saw it, and you see in Bree's face when she turns around and holds the gun, like, what the shit, what did I just do? But then she's pointing the gun at everyone because she's like, what's happening? Oh no. The moment of her shooting the gun in the air and then realizing that every single person in the massive crowd has gone silent, I actually think is a really good moment. It's just so funny.
Yeah. So really, everything that happens from here onwards is all because of Bree.
I think it would have turned into a violent riot anyway, but just turned it into a panic riot, which made it worse.
Yeah. But and it sped up the process as well. It escalated matters. So here we go now, guys. Everyone is now panicking and running everywhere, with people being shoved and crushed left and right. Gabby is the first one we see start to get crushed, and she manages to escape by hiding under a parked car because she's having trouble now finding Juanita in the scrambling. Susan and Renee get split up, with Susan getting pushed further into the crowd, and this is when a white picket fence is broken, which I guess destroys the whole symbolism of suburbia.
Yeah, that could be a really symbolic shot, and
I think it was supposed to be a symbolic shot.
Oh, everyone's getting crushed.
Yeah, and we see Susan fall to the floor and get trampled on.
Oh, that nice. Shot.
It's not a nice shot as well, because for anybody that obviously has been trampled on, it takes the wind out of you. You can't breathe.
Yeah, watching Susan get stomped on the belly, that made me really uncomfortable.
Bob and Lee are panicking as they now can't move, so they decide to go back into the house, but this is when Juanita sits up and asks them not to leave her because she's now getting scared.
Yeah, so now Bob and Lee are like, oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, so now they're stuck in a car, surrounded by panicked people, and they can't leave.
Yeah.
Lynette runs up to the dude from Hydrangea Circle. There are random points in Desperate Housewives that I always, always remember, even though they're not anything that's major, or, you know, they're not a huge plot point. I don't think many people find them to be particularly funny or a standout moment, but this is one of them. Just like with Tom's mum, where she's like, my hands are starting to crack and bleed. Mm-hmm. And this is another one. So Lynette runs up to the dude from Hydrangea Circle and essentially tells him to stop because this isn't what they wanted. And he was like, oh, we're about to smash this place up. And Lynette just goes, oh my God.
yeah. Well, she's so shocked. I don't think she has any idea what to do.
Him and his friends go into the
halfway house
to start smashing things up, and so she goes to chase after him, but this is when we find Karen on the floor yelling for help. And so inside the house, the guys are going ham.
Not Karen.
Yeah, she was on the floor
with a little blood on her head.
Yeah, but Lynette pulls her up. She's fine.
You can crush anyone else, just leave Karen alone.
So back in the car, Lee tells Bob to just drive because people will move.
That's not a great idea, Lee.
No, but it's very gay.
Yeah.
He's just like, just drive, okay?
What? I totally passed.
Very clueless energy. Bob starts to inch forward, which just gets everyone's attention. And this is when Kinski sees that it's Bob and Lee and decides to sell them out by yelling that those are the guys that sold and pointing at them in the car.
Oh my God. Mrs. Kinski is one of the worst people. She's nothing but horrible.
There's also a child in there now as well. So, bitch, nobody seems to realise. And because Bob and Lee are the guys that sold, people then start rocking the car to try and intimidate them and get them out. Which then scares Juanita even more. So Lee climbs into the back seat to try and calm Juanita down, who's terrified of all of the angry conservatives who can't manage a peaceful protest if their life depended on it, and instead feel the need to get what they want out by intimidation only.
They'd probably care more if Juanita wasn't a little Mexican girl as well.
That's true. If Juanita was a little white chick, they'd be like, oh, look, quick, get her out of the car. Now shake it.
Yeah. The gays are trying to steal that child.
Yeah. That's literally it. Look at them. Look at them grooming her. Mm. So with the crowd slowly dispersing, Gabby climbs out from under the car that she was hiding beneath and sees Juanita in the back of Bob and Lee's car. Someone smashes the window of Bob and Lee's car, and Gabby is a fierce mother who runs over, grabs the leg of the guy in the car, pulls him to the ground, which looked painful.
Oh my God, she did a fatality. She pulled his leg out from under him and he just like smashes his whole body onto the car as he falls. And I was like, yeah, bring him down.
Yeah, I know, it was a proper fit. That's like a suburbia fatality. Like if Mortal Kombat was set in suburbia.
Oh yeah. Oh, you don't want to mess with these ladies. Holy shit.
So she then grabs Juanita and her and Carlos run off, leaving Bob and Lee to fend for themselves in the crowd.
Yeah, which I get because it's your child, but yeah, they just leave them to die.
They really do just leave them to get ripped to shreds.
Yeah.
Paul and Beth are heading inside when Lynette stops Paul and blames him for everything. But he, rightfully, reminds Lynette that this is all on her, as they're her friends. They're the ones who are clearly no better than what they believe ex-cons are like. And he heads inside and leaves Lynette to watch over the street at the damage she's done.
Yeah, not a great moment, Lynette, is it?
It's not a great moment, no. So after Lynette's done watching the destruction, she then notices that Bob and Lee are getting attacked by a group of men, with one of them bottling Lee.
Yeah, that made me uncomfortable as well.
Like, I'm not a fan of Lee, but even he doesn't deserve to be bottled. Like, bitch, that's a hate crime. Lynette then runs over and pulls the guys off Bob and Lee, yelling at them to stop because they're her neighbours. And then they look at each other and forgive. It's very overdramatic with the music.
I think the line was meant to incite some sort of heartwarming sentiment when she says, he's my neighbour.
I think it's supposed to show forgiveness. Finally, the police arrive and everyone runs, clearing the way for people to see the damage. And Renee and Tom see an unconscious Susan in the middle of the street. Bree is helping Keith inside. Gabby and Carlos are making sure Juanita is okay. And Lynette's with Bob and Lee.
Yeah, Susan just unconscious on the floor.
Yeah, with her clothing like all torn and shit. This leads us to the ending of the episode, and it's the early hours of the morning, and Paul leaves his house to see his masterpiece, which is the damage of the lane that he hates so much, and loving the fact that he's taken all of the ladies down a peg, especially Lynette. I mean, and Susan, that pesky landlord of his.
I mean, good for you, Paul. You certainly proved your point.
He really did.
Yeah.
Suddenly, a gun is fired, and Paul is shot.
And who shot the gun? Was it Lee?
Who shot the sheriff?
Is Lee getting his revenge?
Was it Lee?
Lee's got the same gun that we see in the opening.
Was it Lee? Was it Lynette? Was it Beth?
Was it Kinski?
Could have been Kinski. And that is the final disaster episode of Desperate Housewives.
Yeah, and this one really made me uncomfortable.
It was a really good episode, I think. I think they really did quite a good job of capturing that sort of riot essence.
So let's move on to the next segment where Joel's going to give us the gayest and the straightest moment of the episode. So what do you have for the gayest moment?
My award for gayest moment goes to Lee for just drive, they'll move.
Yeah, no. No, they won't, Lee.
Oh, well, I totally pass. Yeah, it's very Cher Horowitz. It's very gay driver.
It's like that scene in Ab Fab where Eddie and Patsy are driving and then there's a couple of people walking across the zebra crossing and then she's just honking her horn and still driving like, move, it's a road.
It's very that interview with Chris Crocker where the guy's like, what do you think about Britney's hit and run? He's like, Britney's the queen. She's God. She could do whatever. Let her hit.
Let her hit. And then what do you have for straightest moment?
My award for straightest moment goes to Brett, or Brent, or whatever his name is, for bringing all his manly friends with baseball bats to smash things.
Ah, the violent home association guy.
Because straight men love to smash things.
Yeah.
They love it.
That's just absolutely ruining this protest.
Yeah. And now we move on to Bee's Awards for Best and Worst Parent. So who do you have for the best parent?
So my award for...
Best Parent of the Episode.
I gave it to Tom and Lynette because Parker has clearly been raised with some good values here. He asked some really insightful questions and he did manage to bring some pause to Lynette here. So they must have raised him right in some regards, even if their hatred for Paul is blinding them to what Parker is trying to raise in the first place.
You listeners can't see me, but I'm pulling that face at Britney Paul's in Fifth Harmony 1.
Well, who did you think I was going to give it to?
I thought you were going to give it to Susan for getting MJ the heck out of Dodge.
That's not good enough. I didn't see her do anything.
She got MJ out of there.
Whereas I actually saw a result of good parenting somewhere along the line with Parker here.
Yeah.
Parker's such a sweetheart.
You're entitled to your wrong opinion. It's fine.
I don't care. Parker is such a sweetheart.
He is a sweetheart. He absolutely is a sweetheart.
They did something right there.
Yeah. Who do you have for the worst parent?
My award for...
Worst parent of the episode.
I mean, obviously Gabby, whose plan was, I'm just going to leave you, Juanita, to look after the other kid while I go out and do this protest.
Yeah.
I'm going to leave you in the house on your own when there's 100 plus random people, strangers on the street before all the other extras show up.
Yeah.
Terrible. And you don't leave kids this young on their own. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that you had a pedophile on the street, potentially.
That is true. No, I'd say that's correct.
Yeah.
But at the same time, Carlos was also here.
I completely forgot about Carlos because he wasn't in the scene when Gabby said to look after Celia. So no. Actually, that's true. Gabby and Carlos.
Yeah.
You both get it.
You both get it. You were both there. You're both parents.
So yeah, bravo, bravo, fucking bravo to everyone for all of your awards.
Yep.
That was Season 7, Episode 10, Down the Block, There's a Riot, which is a very appropriate title. If anyone has any questions, queries, comments and theories, where can they find us?
You can find us on Instagram at Boyfriends Review.
We also have email, which is boyfriendsreview@outlook.com, and you can find our friend Louis, who does the podcast artwork, on Instagram at docredmonkdesign, where he also has a link to his Etsy page where he does commissions.
Yes.
Join us next time when we'll be back in your ear holes with Season 7, Episode 11, Assassins.
Ooh.
Also very appropriately titled.
Yes.
So we'll see you then.
Bye, guys.
Bye.